Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello. Thanks, Mom. That's Mom in the audience. Isn't she great? Thanks, Mom. What enthusiasm. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which has gotten a little smaller as we speak. And the reason why is because the GSO, that's not the KGB, but the GSO, which is a general service organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, has created, through the auspices of the Grapevine, which is our monthly meeting in print, a sponsorship book. It's called One-on-One Sponsorship. This is the first time that this organization, in its inception of 78, 79 years, has produced such a work. Most of the time, sponsorship is we've been using the verbal tradition other than what's found in Chapter 7 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You sponsor the way your sponsor sponsored you. What else could you do? And he sponsored the way his sponsor sponsored him. And his sponsor, and you get the, it's like playing telephone. If you ever played telephone in elementary school, and it goes around a circle, a phrase or a statement is made, and it goes around a circle. And usually what happens at the end of that circle is that something is added, something is lost, and definitely something's changed. It sounds nothing like the original concept. And basically that's what has happened a lot of the times, or most of the time, in AA. I hate to say a lot or most or anything because I really don't know, but in my experience, that's what I've seen, and that's one of the reasons we did Rum Radio, to see if we could qualify and quantify some of this information that's been made available to me, and then I could pass it on to other sponsors by sponsoring and reading, and actually practical experience shows that the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. That's the simpleness of this program, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Now, the Big Book gives us direction of how to accomplish that in the shortest period of time with the greatest effective result. Yay. But it's done in the shortest period of time. The 12 and 12 came out, which is our supplement that's the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. A book came out later as the practical experience of those people who work the 12 steps through the Big Book. So we have found in time that this practical experience has become critical and crucial to our understanding of the disease of alcohol and drugs. So, having said that, I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama as a public service presentation. Thanks, guys. It helps. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time, so we give them a little plug. I gratefully would like to acknowledge or introduce and acknowledge my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does the fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, basically so does the world. When you teach children correct principles, they end up teaching themselves. But if there's nobody home, latchkey kids, empty lot weeds, they're not going to learn those correct principles. And they're going to learn from the street gangs. And the street gangs usually huddle around drugs and alcohol and illicit sex and all the fun stuff when you're young. These are the folks that end up in the hospitals and in the prisons and AA and NA and all that. And, you know, what are we going to do about that? How can we stem the flow, the tide, the epidemic that's going on today? I like to think of it this way. If you think you can change the world, it's either grandiose romanticism or politics. You can only change the world one man at a time. And sometimes that's the sponsor willing to give of his time, talents, and treasure for the benefit of someone else. And you know what? When his attitude changed, when my attitude changed to be of maximum service to God and my fellows, the world changed. So we're hoping that in Rum Radio we could pass that on to the next sufferer and to the sponsor, give him some practical information. Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph, and hello, everybody. It's a privilege to be here. It's my way of giving back, and I know it's Joseph's way of giving back. I like to say a few things about the radio program and Joseph's involvement. This is not a get-rich scheme. In fact, he makes no money at all through this website. As a matter of fact, he's sunk thousands into it, and he does this as his way of giving back. So I just want to acknowledge that and let everybody know that we're here to help. There were people in the rooms and in recovery who helped us when we arrived. If it weren't for that, I'd be dead. I think Joseph would say the same thing. And so now we have a responsibility. This is like a fruit orchard, folks. And when people first arrive, they come into the orchard and they pick the fruit, they nourish themselves, and it's really hunky-dory. But the orchard is here because somebody went to the trouble to prune the trees and groom the place so that it really is productive when the new person arrives. This is all about the new person arriving and how they are nurtured and treated. So we have to put some effort into that. When you arrived at your 12-step group, was AA or NA or MA, Marijuana Anonymous, or Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, now there's a growing, a booming business with the Sex Addicts Anonymous. But all these anonymous meetings grew out of the AA Big Book of the era, 1939 era. And when you arrive, you are supposed to get some training into how to work the 12 steps so that then in turn later you can help people, newer people than you, work the 12 steps. That's what this is all about. Early in the history of the 12-step groups, the families were really reached out to in a wonderful way, the wives, the kids, and for women that were having a drinking problem, the husbands. It was a family thing. I've been in recovery over 25 years, thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and mainly Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. And way back 25 years ago, there was a lot of outreach to the families. I don't know exactly what's happened to it. I don't see it happening very much at all anymore. We need to put it back. That's what Rum Radio is about, is going back to basics and I'm glad you're tuning in. Should I give the phone number, Joseph?
Yes, please.
Okay. So if you'd like to call in, here, let me click. I'm also in the process of opening a chat room here so that you can write questions or comments if you'd like. And let me see here. So do you have the phone number in front of you, Joseph?
Yes, I do. It's 949-534-0621. In New Jersey, it's 949-534-0621. In Malaysia, it's 949-534-0621. By the way, we're very popular in Nepal, India. We brawl over the world. You know why we're popular in Nepal?
I can't guess.
They like our yak. This is not AA. This is not NA. This is not CA. This is Rum Radio and rumradio.org. We're closer to Paranoids Anonymous, where no one will tell you where they hold the meetings. And if you can hang in the whole hour, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. Now, we should have a good show. We're going to go back to a little basics of the show. Originally, our show was about reducing the rumradio.org website to audio. So if you go back into the archives, most, if not all, of the site itself is reduced to audio on the radio show. That was our first intent. And as that new pieces come in, we would do shows. But we had gone to an interview format. But tonight I thought, you know, a little change of pace would be fun. We have a piece that I wanted to discuss. It's a little controversial. Usually I don't get into the controversy in AA. If you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. And since no one is, you might, as an alcoholic, I might not be right, but I'm never wrong. So it gets kind of heated sometimes when we get into ideas and concepts of AA, because most of this is about experience, strength, and hope. And the individual experience varies. So everybody's experience is a little different. So when you try to quantify that, you're going to get divergence of opinions. And that's how usually the meetings run. Most people would prefer literature meetings because we stay on track with the literature meetings. Discussion meetings are more like a cross between a self-help program, group therapy, and an agnostic revival meeting. So we'd like to keep to program literature. We find that to be the most productive. Now, having said that, we got a disclaimer. Tonight we're going to do the show. It's the top post or the post first scene when you get to the rumradio.org. It's called Alcohol and Drugs, the Twin Thugs. They are equal opportunity destroyers. Have you ever heard of that? Harold?
Absolutely. Alcohol, folks, is a drug. In fact, let me make a little comment. The research is showing, sadly, that more people die from alcohol overdose than all the other drug overdoses combined. Alcohol is a drug. It's a dangerous drug. And very few people, in my experience, in the rooms, when you go to meetings, are just drinkers. Almost everybody I meet does some drinking and some drugs combined. I know I did, and so I needed a program that, luckily, the solution is the same, folks. So arguing about the problem is really pointless because the solution is the same. We need the 12 steps, which turn selfishness into sacrificial love, and they turn pride into humility. Joseph?
Very nice, Harold. I like that. That was very good. Very well stated and very well put. The post is about singleness of purpose. I call it singleness of porpoise, and it doesn't, to me, it doesn't hold water. Some of the folks in AA, some of the old timers, will argue this to the nth degree because one of our co-founders, Bill W., had written a post, I believe it was 1971, I think before he passed on. It was in the Grapevine, which is our monthly magazine, and it was called, and that was Problems Other Than Alcohol by Bill W., co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to wit, the following excerpts from the Grapevine, General Service Conference, 1969, 70 and 72. Well, even
hey, let
the
me
year
interrupt.
After he passed. Yeah.
How do I find the information on the website? I'm on rumradio.org. Oh, by the way, the chat room is open, folks, and so you can go to rumradio.org, click on the upper right corner the word live, and go over and get on the chat room and ask questions. So what do I click on, Joseph, to find singleness of purpose?
Okay, well, it's under the alcohol and drugs, the twin thugs that are equal opportunity destroyers. It has a the cartoon that the king has no clothes. It's the first post, the first one that flips around on the website.
Okay, and I click on that picture of the king?
You click on the picture.
Okay.
All right, got it. And the problem of drug addiction in its several forms lies close to us all. It stirs our deepest interest and sympathy. Many AAs, especially those who have suffered these particular addictions, are now asking, what can we can do about drugs within our fellowship and without? Specifically, here's a list of questions we are often asked. Okay, Harold, I'm going to ask you some questions. You got 25 years, so I want to see what the questions sound like to you. One, can a non-alcoholic, pill, or drug addict become an AA member?
Well, yes. The traditions state that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop.
No. Yeah, I didn't like it either, but that's the answer. Two, actually, if you look at the third tradition, we're going to get into that. At the end, that's the soundbite on the wall, is that a desire to stop drinking is the only requirement. But if you actually you read the tradition, a lot of folks don't read the tradition. They go by the soundbites that we have listed on the wall as the whole tradition. At the end of the tradition, it says, any alcoholic that says he's a member is... that's all he has to do, is to say if he says so. So if you go as a purist on that, what it's stating is that not even requiring a desire. Now, some of the old-timers don't like that. I said, well, that's what it says. You're a member if you say so.
Okay.
I mean, if you read the tradition, that's what it says.
Yeah.
It starts off that you need a desire, but it ends up if you say so. So it's a very broad brush that they felt was necessary for the anarchist alcoholic.
So if I, so what was the question again?
Okay. Can a non-alcoholic, pill, or drug addict become an AA member?
Oh, I see.
And the answer
so
was
the
no.
So the answer is yes, they have to say so.
No, the answer is no. According to the... the information on the singleness of purpose, I keep wanting to say porpoise, it's a no. Bill wrote no. Two, can such a person be brought as a visitor to an open AA meeting for help and inspiration?
I would say yes.
Yes. Yay!
Okay.
One.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, it. Three, if so, should these non-alcoholic, pill, or drug users be led to believe that they have become AA members?
That's probably a no.
That is a no. Yes, another no.
Wow.
Four, can a pill or drug taker who has a genuine alcoholic history become a member of AA? Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding, da, 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 da. I would say no.
It's a yes.
Oh, man, I'm doing terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And now, okay, now there are certain things that AA cannot do for anybody, regardless of what our desires are, sympathies may be, or our first duty as a fellowship is to ensure our own survival. Therefore, we have to avoid distractions and multi-purpose activities. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practices of the 12-step is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and they've always failed. It has been learned that there is no possible way to make non-alcoholics into AA members. We have to confine our membership to alcoholics. And we have to confine our AA groups to a single purpose. If we don't stick to these principles, we shall almost surely collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. I see no way of making non-alcoholic addicts into AA members. Experiences loudly that we can admit no exceptions, even though drug users and alcoholics happen to be first cousins of a sort. If we persist in trying this, I'm afraid it will be hard on the drug user himself as well as on AA. We must accept the fact that non-alcoholic, whatever his affliction, can be converted into an alcoholic and an AA member. We cannot give AA membership to non-alcoholic addicts, but like anyone else, they should be able to attend open AA meetings, provided, of course, that the group themselves are willing. Reprints of complete article at 15 cents each. AA World Services. Well, that's quite the mouthful, eh?
Yes. Interesting.
Okay, yes, it is interesting, and you could see where the conflict comes. Personally, now we all have our opinions. If you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get the 20 opinions. This is going to be one of them. I believe that to be a bit short-sighted. I could see Bill's purpose in this was to try to keep it pristine, but that was the argument back when the traditions were written, so that's why it's a little confusing. But he does say alcohol has to be involved. Now, if it's just a heroin addict and he doesn't drink, and he's taking pills and he doesn't drink, he's dropping LSD and all the designer drugs, and he doesn't drink, then he doesn't really belong in an AA meeting. Now, that's the question. But I've never found one that really didn't do whatever was available. And alcohol is, of course, what's the most available drug?
Oh, yeah.
Alcohol.
Easy. Alcohol, yeah.
Alcohol, yeah. It's 2.5 million worldwide die every year of alcohol.
Wow.
10 times more than pill prescriptions. It's like 250,000 with prescription drugs and 2.5 million alcoholics worldwide, according to Google. Google, you know, 1,000 years hence, the anthropologists will have concluded they all commune with an all-knowing God, little g, named Google, big G. According to Google, that's the number. So I could see alcohol really is the crux of most of it. I would be hard put, or you would be hard put, to find someone coming into the rooms that did not do drugs and alcohol. Dr. Bob popped pills, so in that sense, he was still an alcoholic, though. Bill dropped acid. That was later on. And that was because he was looking, well, I think he was looking for God in the wrong address, like you often said. He thought perhaps LSD was a way to expand the alcoholic mind and an easier, softer way to become sober was to be found. Do you know that?
Yes. Yeah. But there is no easier, softer way.
No, not that we've found. So we go back into "You're a Member If You Say So." Bill came up with "Singleness of Purpose," I believe, under political pressure from the pristine drunk seeking a morally superior validation of indignation. In my opinion, doesn't hold any water. It also contradicts the spirit of the third tradition. Drug addicts, even back then, were more so then, you know, were dope fiends was the common term for a drug
addict.
Yeah. So that fiendish label, the drunks were afraid it would sully their good reputation. The emperor has no clothes. He didn't then and he doesn't now. Except now we know more that it becomes even more apparent for the lack of apparel. There's very little or no difference. I've been to, you've been to NA meetings, haven't you, Harold?
Oh, yes. I've started an NA meeting and I've really enjoyed the NA meetings because they definitely take things quite seriously, I've found.
Did you find any resistance to the alcoholic walking into an NA meeting?
Not a bit.
Oh, okay. I have. I have. I had to be a little belligerent in there, you know, oh, you're an alcoholic, you know, you really shouldn't be here kind of deal. And I go, yeah? Who's going to toss me? You know, that kind of deal. I don't see, I could see Bill coming up with this, but I really think in the long run, short-sighted, 1981, you know, the shtick, 1981, there was 2 million in the rooms. 29 years later, they did another census, GSO, counting cats, 2,100,000 29 years later. And part of the reason is because the split-offs. The NA, the CA, MA. Now, I agree that the non-drug alcohol phenomenon really doesn't belong, particularly in an AA meeting.
Like the Overeaters Anonymous, they don't belong in a drug
and
alcohol.
No, Gamblers Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, close, but no cigar. Love SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and there's, I don't know how many, 100 and something anonymous, and then some. They don't. These emotional connections really don't connect up with AA. Just on the addiction level, sure, but step one is the key. Step one is the only step that mentions the addictive substance, right? Isn't that it? The other 11 steps don't say anything. It just says alcohol, first step, that's it. So 1/12 of the 12 steps are the problem, 11/12 are the solution or design for living.
Yes.
The rub is that if you don't have the experience stated, whatever that step one is, you can have sympathy, but you don't have empathy.
I was listening to some of the NADAC workshops and some of their printed material, and the main difference is around the word tolerance. When an alcoholic or a drug addict begins taking their substance, as they keep taking it, the substance has less and less effect, and they need to take more and more to get the same effect. That's called tolerance. And that doesn't seem to be the case with Overeaters Anonymous or Sex Addicts Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous. There isn't that experience of tolerance where more and more is needed. The person needs more and more just to get back to a state of normalcy.
But alcohol would give you that too. Alcohol always requires more. There'll always be more with alcohol. But you never really get to that state.
You lose
the state.
Develop tolerance, yes.
Yeah.
With alcohol and with drugs.
Yeah, Bill said too, they're cousins. He was kind of reluctant to use the term cousins. It was getting a little too close. We're less than kin and more than kind. I would put it to you that way.
Yes.
But you still need the empathy of the first step. If you've never done drugs and the person primarily has a drug problem and some alcohol, it might be a little bit more difficult to work the first step with that person. You agree with that or no?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So you need that empathy, and that's where I think where it becomes critical. And this is really comes down to the sponsor again. See, a lot of this comes down to the sponsor. I think the problem in AA, and I hate to even say there was a problem, but it's that we've turned the meetings into the solution and instead of working the 12 steps with another individual called a sponsor. That's really the solution.
My experience is that working the steps with pen and paper and someone to guide me through is the solution. It's not just attending meetings. It's not just getting sober. Getting sober is the all-important first part. I call it the important first 15%. But the other 85% of recovery is working the steps with pen and paper and a sponsor so that our pride can be turned into humility and our selfishness and self-centeredness can be turned into sacrificial love. Even if a person gets sober, if they have not gotten rid of that self-centered attitude, they are in trouble, as is their family.
Of course, and then the key, and I tell my sponsees this, though, if you really want to learn the steps, you have to teach the steps. You have to become a sponsor. As you're bringing someone else through, that becomes your immunity.
Then
that's when you really start learning the steps, is when you're internalizing them and then giving them back to the newcomer. Now you're putting a stamp. That's the key. See, that's what Bill knew. That's what Bob figured out. That's what when Bill said, I'm here to keep me sober, I'm not here to keep you sober, that was the stamp that started AA. That's the concept, giving it back so we can stay sober. It becomes more than that initially. Yeah.
Let's tell that little story. The day that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith met, it was real interesting. Bill had 6 months sober. He was really feeling tempted, and he got on the phone, finally reached Dr. Bob Smith, and Dr. Bob said, well, I'll give you 15 minutes. And when Bill got there, Dr. Bob said, now look here, kid, I've been to the finest hospitals and the finest psychiatrists in the world. What do you think you can tell me in 15 minutes that's going to keep me sober? And Bill said, wait a minute, I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. And they talked for 6 hours.
I have that on the website. It's under Billy Pilgrim at the Mayflower. And it gives the specific information on how all that happened. And, of course, Dr. Bob didn't stay sober. Did you know that at that point?
Right.
It was
right. That's when they started helping other people. Bill wanted to help. Bill went there because talking to another alcoholic would help keep him sober. That's the principle.
Right. After the six-hour talk, it was Dr. Bob felt empowered to go to the AMA meeting in Atlantic City. He was 2 weeks sober, 14 days. And so he hadn't been to a convention like that in a long time. He was drunk before the train left the station. Never really made it to the convention. Got drunk, doubled back, and then he had surgery. And Bill, the consummate salesman, could smell a close. Dr. Bob was the first guy that he was working with that actually he felt that there was a connection, that Dr. Bob would, there was something there that he could convince Dr. Bob that there was a better way. So he came back. Dr. Bob was still reeking of alcohol and had the shakes, called the delirium tremors. Hands were shaking. He had surgery that morning. And he asked Bob, or Bill, one of the two, either asked him, I believe he asked him, and Bill went out and got him some beer. He was a beer drinker. Dr. Bob loved beer. And he got him a beer, and so this way he could calm his nerves down. He had the shakes so he could do his surgery. How humiliating. He comes back after his surgery, and the first thing he tells Bill, I'm going through with it. And he went around to all the people in his town and made amends. So I believe the humiliation of Bill having to buy Bob his last drink as a doctor so he could do his surgery was Dr. Bob's bottom.
That's interesting. And let me mention, a couple years ago I lost a patient. It was a man who was secretly drinking beer every day. He accidentally quit when he went to Houston to visit his sister. She didn't have any money, any transportation, or any beer, and he had a seizure and died. So, folks, I just want to encourage you, if you know somebody who drinks on a daily basis and is thinking about quitting, have them see their doctor. Don't let them quit cold turkey. They could have a seizure and pass away.
All right, let me continue on with this. The kids are coming in now, are coming in younger and younger because of the powders, the heroin, the cocaine, all of that crack.
Crystal meth.
Crystal meth, oh, yeah, especially meth, you know, and they're coming in, and the designer drugs, too, are driving them in. It's hitting them to the ground that much faster. And, of course, they're drinking, too. And, of course, let's not forget that alcohol at one time was also an illegal substance. Remember the Volstead Act? So it was an illegal drug. Bill did LSD and Dr. Bob was addicted to painkillers. How many alcoholics never did any other drug? You would be hard-pressed to make such a find. We are stronger when we put a united front against the disease instead of squabbling as to the particular flavor of the disorder. Remember, it's an equal opportunity destroyer. A member gives us a vivid glimpse of those, this is from the traditions. The groups had many membership rules. Everybody was scared and witless that something or somebody would capsize the boat and dump all back into the drink. Our foundation office asked each group to send in a list of protective regulations. The total list was a mile long. It had all those rules had been in effect everywhere. Nobody could have possibly joined AA at all. So great was the sum of our anxiety and fear. We had considered calling the group Paranoids Anonymous, but the only problem was nobody would tell you where they were holding the meetings. We resolved to admit nobody in but the hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics. Seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Except for the guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof. There could have been no other complications, so beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. Yes, sir. We cater only to pure and respectable alcoholics. Any another would surely destroy us, any of the others. Besides, if we took in those odd ones, what would decent people say about us? We built a fine mesh fence right around AA. Only the elite, for any alcoholic woman, was considered fallen and beyond redemption. The real alcoholics would be permitted. Otherwise, just any rabble could taint our reputation, our good name, and to what havoc employ. If the floodgates were open to the flotsam and jetsam of society's castaway, we would be saddled by a jaundiced judgment of assassination by association. The town drunks were now in fear of their reputation. What would people think? Maybe this sounds comical now. Maybe you think that the old-timers were pretty intolerant, but I can tell you there was nothing funny about this situation then. We were grim because we felt our lives and homes were threatened and that we had it was no laughing matter. Intolerant, you say? Well, we were frightened. Naturally, we begin to act like most everybody does when afraid. After all, isn't fear the true basis of intolerance? Yes, we were intolerant. I wrote this, you'll like this. Anger is fear in action, and intolerance is acceptance in a coma.
There you go.
As no roads are so rough as those who have just been mended, so no sinners are so intolerant as those who have just turned saints. Harold?
Yes, absolutely. You and I have both been to thousands of meetings, and it's just comical now looking back and seeing that these drunks who were willing to drink in public, throw up on themselves in public, do stupid things in public, drive under the influence, injure people, injure themselves, drive into the ditch, poop their pants, all kinds of things, and now they're all concerned about their reputation and how they appear to others who, if they are associated with drug addicts. It is, it's laughable, but as you said, there was nothing, it was not a laughing matter back at that time. So we've come a long way, and I appreciate your treatment of this topic. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. How could we then guess that all these fears were to prove groundless? How could we know that thousands of these sometimes frightening people were to make astonishing recoveries and become our greatest workers and intimate friends? Was it credible that AA was to have a divorce rate far lower than average? Could we then foresee that troublesome people were to become our principal teachers of patience and tolerance? Could any then imagine a society which could include every conceivable kind of character and cut across every barrier of race, creed, politics, and language with ease? Even sexual disorientation. Fear can be headier than whiskey once man has acquired a taste for it. Donald Dowries. We are more often frightened than hurt, and we suffer more from imagination than from reality. Marcus Aeneas Seneca. I love his quotes.
Yes.
The door flung open and we were both pleased and amazed. We would become a society like had never been seen before, all accepting, all tolerating. You were invited to learn, to grow, and the only requirement was a desire to stop drinking. Or, if you think you have a problem with alcohol, come join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. It was the original glass house where no one could afford to cast the first stone. Why did AA finally drop all its membership regulations? Why did we leave to each newcomer to decide himself whether he was an alcoholic and whether he should join us? Why did we dare to say, contrary to the experience of society and government everywhere, that we would neither punish nor deprive any AA membership that we must never compel anyone to pay anything, believe anything, or conform to anything. Harold?
Well, that's I love the way this builds to a crescendo. I think it's so important that they adopted the rule that you're a member if you say so. I think it's so important. And to me personally, it was great to know that I could attend and I could not be kicked out. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Yeah, it's great not to know that you'll never be kicked out. Well, it doesn't go for everybody. I know some people who have been banned from AA, and I'm sorry to say that that happened, but we won't mention names here because it's me.
They rationalize it saying that it's the club that has the rule. It's not AA, the club, but in effect, it is AA. AA has changed some, and I think we need to get back to basics. Joseph?
Yeah, thank you, Harold. Yeah, I bring up the traditions that no one could be compelled to pay anything. No one can be compelled. No one can be excluded. No one could be told what to say, what to think, or what to do. That's in the second tradition.
Yes.
But, you know, some folks kind of miss that over. They go back to the first tradition says that AA depends on AA unity. So if you're disrupting the unity, if you're causing a ripple in that group, there's going to unrippleize you. We want no ripples.
The situation that really grieved me the most is a story about a man who smelled bad, and they were just about ready to kick him out because of the way he smelled, when one of the old-timers looked down and saw a green ooze coming out of his shoe and found out that he didn't need to be kicked out. He needed a hospital because there was gangrene in his foot, and that was the whole problem. So these people who had figured together that they needed to kick a guy out were dead wrong, and the guy was almost dead. That was a close call. And
that was my sponsor, my sponsee rather, who was elected on the board of that particular club, was given the job as henchman. And he told me the story, and he went up to finally tell him that the board had decided to kick him out because he had been warned several times about his repugnant odoriferous odor, and some of the ladies found it very disconcerting. And so since, you know, gangrene's gangrene, and I guess he got used to the smell and didn't notice it himself, which happens. Your olfactory nerve will shut off if you get so used to the odor that you don't notice it anymore, and I'm sure that's what happened with him. And I know both parties, and at the time I got fired. He fired me because I yelled at him for breaking the traditions. He didn't like that. He went to tell him that he was going to have to leave. They voted him out, and he looked down and noticed the gangrenous ooze coming from his foot. And the fellow took him to the hospital where they treated the gangrene.
Just in time. So, in addition, there have been other situations where instead of pushing somebody away, they need to pull them in closer. I've personally been involved in a situation like that. And no matter how many different ways I found to say it, or how much I encourage them to pull people in, not push them away, they seem to be bent on using their power and authority to expel people, which I find very, very unfortunate, completely opposed to the traditions, and is something that I'm grieving even to this day. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. We are an unruly lot, and lots of rules would have no effect and drive some insane, as we would live in search for the exception anyway. We forego the plague of rigid convention, and all in all, we have found that we can only pose an informed, well-meaning suggestion, while an individual's choice remains the cornerstone of prevention. It's really up to the individual. We let God discipline us, not someone else. The answer now seen in Tradition 3 was simplicity itself. At last, experience taught us that to take away any alcoholic's full chance was sometimes to pronounce his death sentence and often to condemn him to endless misery. Who dared to be judge, jury, and executioner of his own sick brother? Hey, who made you judge, Judy, and executioner? Homer Simpson. I'll be judge. I'll be jury, said cunning old Fury. I'll try the whole cause and condemn you to death. The Mouse's Tale, Lewis Carroll. A group after group saw the possibilities. They finally abandoned all membership regulations. One dramatic experience after another clinched the determination until it became our universal tradition. Here are two examples. I'm going to give you the one example, and that should close us up. It was the time before dimes, Anno Domino 1937, AA 02, second year of AA. A time before dimes. You could make a phone call with a nickel.
Yes.
On the AA calendar, it was year two. In that time, nothing could be seen but two struggling, nameless groups of alcoholics trying to hold their faces up to the light. A newcomer appeared at one of these groups, knocked on the door, and asked to be let in. He talked frankly with that group's oldest member. He soon proved that he was a desperate case, and that above all, he wanted to get well. But he asked, "Will you let me in? Will you let me join your group, since I am the victim of another addiction, even worse, stigmatized in alcoholism? You may not want me among you, or will you?" I was approached by someone with 8 years of continuous sobriety, as well as and he was a regular sponsor. He inquired of me if I would be his sponsor. I had assumed that he wanted a change of paint and a fresh look at the steps from another perspective. I questioned him as to his motives, goals, and intent. After wrestling, wrangling, and relying on the coax used by dentists to extract the decaying tooth by the root, he was embarrassed to blush to openly admit a pornographic addiction. He was willing to admit drug and alcohol abuse in open forum, but to whisper pornography in private with a prospective sponsor with shame of ridicule was more than he can bear. Once the particular spiritual malady is addressed, I found the 12 steps to be a spiritual panacea for most, if not all, that ails you. The 12 steps are really quite amazing, but you got to have some in the first step. Like I said, you got to have some kind of association of ailment to have that empathy. If you've never looked at pornography, you don't have that. For me to work with him would have been difficult. I could sympathize with him, but I couldn't empathize with him. And that experience of empathy is the key, I believe, to step one. So
in Sex Anonymous, the first step reads, we admitted we were powerless over our compulsive behavior, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Yeah. See, and that, okay, now it's a, okay. There was the dilemma. What should the group do? And I'm just saying, you know, it was hard because now I have there's a guy with pornography. And I'm not saying pornography should be in AA, although there's quite a few folks that have that addiction in AA. My experience is because for all the years of drinking and drugging, they have, you know, sexual promiscuity has been quite flagrant.
Yes.
So coming in now, they're not drinking, and the secondary addictions blossom.
That's right. They
and
often...
my experience is the secondary addiction will eventually bring you back to your primary drugs and alcohol. Harold?
Amen. Amen. That's right. Actually, the field of marriage counseling has changed so much. Half of marriages still end in divorce, but now half of the divorces involve porn, looking at pornography and masturbating.
Mm. Okay. I don't want to get off into that, but the point is that the 12 steps can work. But step one, I can't beat this horse enough, there has to be a sympathy of an empathy of experience. You got to have a connection. If you've
yes.
never done drugs, and the guy's primarily addicted to drugs and alcohol, there's a fine line of experience. But it could work. You know, but
yes,
that really depends on
the...
Yeah, it's a drug, and it's related to that. You know, with the fact whether he got it illegally and he shot up, he used the needle, and you know all that. You know, does it really matter all that much? Not really, but it takes some.
Oh.
That's where an experienced sponsor really comes in handy.
Yes.
Okay, so he's going to the oldest group. Will you let me in? Yes or no? Give us your beaten down, your broken, and your addicted. Addicts longing to be free, clean and sober. Okay, we will settle for a reasonable facsimile. At first, the elders could look only at the objections. We deal, they said, with alcoholics only. Shouldn't we sacrifice this one for the sake of the many? So went the discussion, while the newcomer's fate hung in the balance. Then one of the three spoke in a very different voice. What we are really afraid of, he said, is our reputation. We are much more afraid of what people might say than the trouble this strange alcoholic might bring. As we've been talking, five short words have been running through my mind. Something keeps repeating to me. What would the master do? I like to think of that as the still small voice running through his mind. Now, who's the master? Who's he talking about? What master? Who's the master?
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus. They didn't say Jesus, and I think there was a specific reason they didn't say Jesus, because they were trying to keep AA non-religious. So they were afraid that mentioning Jesus in the big book would have turned somebody off. And our goal was to be all-inclusive. So even though, what would the master do, referring to Jesus, his name was not used, I believe. Not another word was said. What more indeed could be said? A reputation once broken may possibly be repaired. But the world will always keep their eye on the spot where the crack once stood, even though no wider than a hair. Overjoyed, the newcomer plunged into the 12-step work. Tirelessly, he laid AA's message before scores of people. Wow. Scores of people. Okay, wait a minute. I'm confused with something here, Harold. Now, this guy's a drug addict, right? Follow me here, right? He's a drug addict?
Yeah.
And he's laying this scores of people. Since this was a very early group, these scores have turned to multiply themselves into thousands. Who were the folks that he was working with? Who was he working with? Who's the scores of people? Who are they?
Other drug addicts.
Other alcoholics or both?
Yes.
So he's working as a sponsor with scores of people.
Yeah.
But he's not an alcoholic. He had another problem. He was a drug addict. So the drug addict in the beginning was working with either other drug addicts and or alcoholics or both. So what was the consequence to this work? Since this was a very early group, these scores were since multiplied themselves into thousands. Wow. Never did he trouble anyone with his other difficulty. They can't even say it in the tradition. His other difficulty. AA had taken its first step in the formation of Tradition 3. So there you go.
Excellent.
So somehow when I read the Bill's pamphlet and I really get into the third tradition, there seems to be a disconnect. Do you see it or is that me?
I see it too, yes.
Bill wrote the traditions.
Yeah.
And then he comes up later on in his life. I mean, this is quite a bit later. I mean, the traditions, I think, were approved in 1951 at the Cleveland Convention. Who goes to Cleveland? But they did it in Cleveland. They approved it. The whole body of AA approved the traditions. Dr. Bob signed it off reluctantly. It's on the website. Bill is quite the salesman. Dr. Bob finally signed off with a sigh and said, the only way I'm going to get any peace is I'm going to have to sign this off so this guy leaves me alone.
Yeah.
That's why Dr. Bob was afraid that the traditions would have been used to garner power in the ivory towers of New York City.
Yeah.
And some of what Dr. Bob's fear has come true, not particularly some in the GSO, there's no doubt about that, but in the local groups and clubs have taken some of this information and have used and have converted it or controverted it for their own purposes of power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was concerned about. But these are the traditions. So I see singleness of purpose as a conflict with the third tradition. But, you know, when I speak of this, people have a hard time with that because they're going to hold on. And then some of the NAs, I've gone to NA meetings, and they, you know, I've been there recently at the club I used to go to there. One of the Dougs up there, and the guy came in and said he was a drug addict, and he piped up and said, well, you really don't belong here, and the group didn't like that. As a group, they didn't like that, but there's still people like Doug who will make that distinction. And, of course, N.A. being cast as the villain, now they get on their horse, and the alcoholic walks into their room, and it's like, hey, wait a minute, you know, you don't really belong here. You got to go to AA. And, you know, and this divisiveness holds no one any good.
I agree. It doesn't do anyone any good. And I've found less divisiveness at NA. Really, the people at AA seem to still be up in arms. But it's a great point. I think we ought to be open, tolerant, accepting, and warm at all the 12-step meetings. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about this tonight.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, do you have any last words? And then we can button her up.
Well, I just encourage everyone, work your 12 steps with a pen and paper and a sponsor in a way to get yourself ready so that you can lead someone else through the 12 steps, and that's when your recovery really takes hold. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Harold. Thanks for your time and your efforts on our behalf. In closing, I'd like to say, RUM Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. And in Texas, sometimes I'll say Louisiana, because Louisiana really is a foreign country. It still has a Napoleonic code, believe it or not. We're in 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. So it gets around. It's usually by word of mouth. I do a lot on Facebook, and if you're on Facebook and you want to befriend, I put some stuff on there too. It's good information. No one's compelled to do anything about anything. It's just information. One fellow asked me questions one time, and I said, look, it's really good information. I said, but you got to remember, it's only information, and information that isn't acted upon remains in a void. You got to take an action. The whole point of AA is action. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. So remember, if you're looking for sponsorship information, you got it right here, rumradio.org. And remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.